Gamer's Guide to the Galaxy. Interstellar Hello? Gaming Podcast.
Hello? Anybody out there? Light's still on. Maybe? Anyway, put 50 pence in the meter. It's been a while. Some of us are dead. Some of us are even more deader than dead. Yes, Brian can die twice, it seems. It's a shame, but hey-ho. But I will be your captain. That's how bad shit's got. Aboard episode 15 of Gamer's Guide to the Galaxy. God forbid, we might hit 20 one day and the world may implode. But joining me today is a survivor who I'm assured is going to say something. What that is, we're going to find out right now.
And I'm Charles, and I am the crew's Dark Saber wielder.
Perfect. Does not canonically fit into my story, but thanks very much for the addition.
It's sci-fi. Well, no, actually, I have been, for a friend's son, I've been making a Darksaber prop. So,
Oh, well.
It just relates to what I've been doing to keep busy.
There you go. Crafting hour starts now. So,
yes.
It has been many, many months. Nah, it's been a while. I'm just going to say life has got in the way. Kind of hard to get in the way when it's a pandemic. But, you know, well, is it a pandemic? Oh, I don't know. Were you out yet? Oh, I don't know. Who knows? Could be cheeky and say the pandemic ended and everything's fine, but you know, I'm not going to go there. But we are back to talk games and life. Life and games.
They're both the same.
Yeah.
Vita.
That's why you say it back to front, so you get that cool symbiotical circle thing, the Ouroboros effect. So what have you been up to in the time since we last spoke? Stuff.
Not a lot, actually. It's been a bit of a weird patch in my life, trying to get by. But games have still been present, and I've played a few of them, which is good. I can't say I know what's really happening in the games world. I don't know what news is really out there.
Stuff has happened.
Good. What kind of stuff?
Lots of stuff. There was two big indie showcases this week. To date this episode, why not? What's the indie stuff happening? Gamescom's happening in 2 weeks. Woo!
There you go.
The Steam Deck's coming. Woo.
Are you interested?
Before I heard about it, details, yeah, I was like, yeah, it's a cool idea, but after actually hearing about the machine and it's what it does and its limitations and stuff, I'm a bit like, I need to see, I need to wait to see what it's like when people have it, if you know what I mean.
It reminds me of the Lynx, the old handheld, like one of the OG colour handheld games devices.
Apparently it weighs a ton and stuff, and the dock's not going to be there at launch, and they're staggering the launch of the models, so the top of the range models not going to be out till the middle of next year apparently, and it's all a bit it's one of these ones in a world where you can't get chips, and the likes of Nintendo openly admit they can't get chips. For Steam, you just go, we're going to build a handheld PC. Where are you getting the chips for, boys? It's going to magic, you know, you're just going to magic them at your ass. I heard the lifespan on it's horrific as well. I heard that to get the best lifespan, you need to stream it. You can't play directly for the machine and stuff and that. And it's just all about. The more it goes on, the more the weeks go on with it, the more kind of information is waiting out, and I'm kind of going, it's not really all that, you know what I mean? Apparently, power-wise, it's somewhere between the, it it's just a bit more powerful than the Xbox One X, I think, in the PS4 Pro, or it's round about that area, which is a kind of like red flag. It's like, well, surely with a PC device, it's surely you really want to put it future proofed so that you, well, but you know what I mean, you think they would, as a, they'd have it a bit more, get a bit more grunt, because I know like they're showing Doom and Control and Fallen Order running on it, but that's great, but I played on them a year ago. Do you know what I mean? I'm not wanting to pay £500 for a machine that I can play games that I've already played a year ago, even if it's on the Move or handheld. Do you know what I mean? Personally, I like the idea of buying it and having a machine that I can plug into a monitor and have a PC, because I don't have a PC. It's one of the glaring big holes I don't have as a gaming PC. And I thought, well, if I can buy one of these for £400 or whatever, plug it into a dock, stick a mouse and keyboard into it, and go for there with my Steam account, I thought that's a great idea. But I just, the handheld side, it just doesn't appeal to me at all.
Yeah, you probably could get something else that could do that and not spend the money on the screen.
Yeah, well, that's the thing as well, isn't it? The Switch OLED's coming as well, isn't it? Which is a victim of saying demise, because the whole thing is, if they can't get the chips to make Switches powerful, then they're not going to do it. So, but what they can get is screens and stuff. So it's kind of like the OLED's kind of like what the Switch 2 in brackets would have been, but because they can't get the chips, they're just not doing any upgrades internally to it, like power wise. And I know a lot of people are going,
yeah, it's in a weird one. I thought there was a little bit of a boost, but they're not really talking about it.
No, from what I understand, it's a carbon copy of the OG machine. It's kind of like, I know they've refined the OG machine a wee bit since launch, the Soil Better Nunchuck controls, Joy-Cons, and stuff. And it's just a lot of quality of life improvements, better stand, the better Joy-Cons, you know what I mean? It's just a lot of quality of life things, and it is priced a slightly more expensive than the OG one, but at the end of the day, I don't know who it's for, because technically it's more expensive than the OG one, but really to get the benefit for it, you need to use it in handheld. So your kind of real target market's the Switch Lite crew. And if you're getting a Switch Lite for like half the price of an original Switch, you're kind of saying, well, what's the point? No doubt it'll look lovely, but at the same time, I'm like, But then the big thing I noticed as well is that everybody's drawing I can't get my head around it, but they're drawing a line between the Steam Deck and the Switch. Like, the Switch and the Steam Deck are rivals. I'm like, but how? One's got a player base that know what they're doing with them. The other one's trying to tap into a newfound player base. Plus, the fact is, we don't know about availability, we don't know about price, blah, blah, blah. And at the same time, it's kind of like, well, I don't know many kids that have Steam accounts and stuff and full-blown PC rigs, so it's kind of like, well, the Switch is more a family machine. Do you know what I mean?
I do. I thought it was weird, because software is the key to the Switch. Like, people want the Switch because of the Nintendo software, which you just can't get on Steam.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Most of the PC games that we would play on our computer, or more Odin, my son, are games that need mouse and keyboard. And so, like, a handheld device games wouldn't really work. Like, he plays strategy games, which just don't work with controller. He plays like SimCity type stuff, or Goblins of Elderstone. So it's like a city builder. Goblin village builder. That just wouldn't work with a controller. So I agree. I don't know. I was intrigued, and I thought that could be a cool way to play some more PC games, but nah, I don't. All the games that use controller, I can get on my console.
Yeah, that's the thing as well. And it's like, well, don't get me wrong, the PC said, the only reason I'm interested in a PC is early access is very readily, infinitely more available on PC. You're able to get preview builds and stuff 100 times easier than what you are on Xbox and consoles. whereas and also on the PC is the fact that there's like it's maybe easier to get a couple indie titles that don't it's like
what am I missing,
it'd be nice to play full fat Counter-Strike, be nice to try Valorant, do you know what I mean? It's like, but I'm no it'd be nice to try the PC version of Rainbow Six Siege just to see what mouse and keyboard controls, but the keyword there, it's nice to try, do you know what I mean? It's not like I need to play it at all costs.
You're not missing out.
No.
Yeah. I was kind of intrigued and tempted to trade in my Switch for the new one, but I don't know if I will now. Mostly because my Switch battery is getting a little bit wonky. So,
Well, in that case, I probably would say it's probably worth it. Just because, technically, you're trading it in. If you were to trade it in, you just get hardware up. It's a quality of life upgrade.
It's just like a replacement. Yeah, exactly. It will just extend the life of it. Having a bit more power would be good, because there are a few games that struggle.
Frame rate tanks sometimes on it, and all that much.
Yeah, we played the Breath of the Wild prequel, the Dynasty Warriors one.
Mm-hmm.
It was fine single player, but you jumped into split screen, and boy, it got.
Yeah, it's just the sheer number of units on the screen at the same time. You know what I mean?
It got choppy. It got very choppy.
See, this thing, when the Steam Deck launches, I can imagine Nintendo going heavier into the cloud stuff, because they've dabbled with the cloud stuff for Doom and Control and stuff, but it's never really took off, if you know what I mean. But there's nothing to say that
relying on servers, yeah,
but there's nothing to say they don't do that. But see, when the Steam machine comes and it's like, oh, it's amazing, because like I'm saying, a lot of folk are saying to get the best results out of Steam you need to stream it, so you know what I mean, it's kind of like, well.
But you can do that with an iPhone. Yeah. Like, you can just have your phone and stream games.
Yeah. Plus, well, fuck, you can use xCloud now and stream Xbox games straight to your phone. Picture perfect with a good connection, you know what I mean? It becomes a muddy, it becomes a harder sell, unless you're embedded within Steam and you've got hundreds and hundreds and thousands of titles. It's a harder sell, I think, because £500 for a machine that you might use once or twice a week, if that. Or like every so often when a game comes out, and like you're saying, it doesn't seem orientated towards stuff like strategies and stuff, you know what I mean? It's a strange one.
Yeah, it'd be a great game console to play Hollow Knight, but you can play that on everything else in under the sun already, so
yeah.
No, I agree, it's kind of cool, but I don't know who it's for. It's not necessary for me.
I'll be like, what do you call it? It reminded me of the Steam controller. Remember the Steam controller came out and everybody was like, oh, it's the future and that, because obviously it had touchpads and no sticks. And then fast forward 6, 7 months, 8 months after it, and they were getting that, they couldn't get rid of them fast enough.
They had that streaming device that you could then plug into a TV and then stream Steam to it. And they were selling them for like a dollar.
Yeah.
I remember Brian got one. It was just crazy because they got rid of them because they had too many.
Yeah, it's the old scenario, but Steam's a good software company, but they're not quite a hardware company. Do you know what I mean? It's like they've not really released a piece of hardware that makes you go, well, that's, do you know what I mean? Like, that's amazing. Well done, Steam. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's all just a bit iffy and unsure, you know what I mean?
All these PC companies keep trying to dabble in this like console-ish.
Yeah, because the money's there, but the market's massive. This is the thing, they want a piece of that market. That's why everybody's trying to jump on the streaming service thing. Because I think once whoever cracks the streaming service, I think the biggest move is seeing like the ability to stream coming to TVs without consoles. I think that's a massive move. I think that you kind of start to see the future of this omnipotent one platform that's on phone, tablet, TV, laptop, anything you've got a screen on, you can stream to and play a AAA title. That's when you start realising, well, maybe this is a viable option for the future, you know what I mean?
I'm still nervous about streaming because the games I like I've been playing Sekiro again.
But they'll get better.
I just don't think that.
This is the thing, I've played
Gears of War
and Forza remotely, and I tried to play Flight Sim remotely, but it's early doors for all this tech. You know what I mean? I know like Stadia is a thing that's existed and stuff, but realistically speaking, you're talking about another 1 or 2 year. But I definitely think if it does click, I think we will see the end of boxy selling consoles. I definitely think we'll see the. I think what we'll see for new for future generations is here's a controller and a voucher to get you onto this store to buy to redeem for so many titles or something. You know what I mean? I think that's what the future. I definitely think that's what Xbox wanted to do.
Oh yeah, for sure.
They want to just sell you a digital subscription.
Yeah.
And a controller, and send you on your way. Controller, set of headphones, and on your way. You know what I mean? On you go. But
well, yeah, it just makes me nervous. The games I like again, Sekiro, I don't think that will ever stream because, like, you're talking about like 1-2 frames you've got to react.
Mm.
Like, you're just never going to be able to.
But then,
have
the,
those
is that
parries.
Developer thing? The developers then start calculating for the kind of weight of streaming and stuff. You know what I mean? Because obviously, technically, all the games are streaming. The new aren't technically angled at streaming. Whereas I think if
my
you take
concern
it
is,
into development,
yep.
You put in like a kind of a design within latency tolerance. See, it gets interesting.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
If they could keep the same type of games and you know, and develop for that, I just worry that the designs will be hampered and the creativity hampered to suit the streaming. So we're going to get slower, more, I guess, cinematic games that aren't gonna, yeah, reduce the action. Mm. And so we start diluting the gameplay to suit the new platform. But it is definitely getting better.
Yeah.
Because I guess that's people are streaming fighting games and it's sort of working, but it suits certain places in the world because where the servers are held.
Yeah, but it's infrastructure. I guess. But it's only going to get better as time goes on. It's only going to get better. You know what I mean?
But are they gonna invest in infrastructure in places like New Zealand? Probably not. So the servers aren't going to be held here. They're going to be held in Australia, and I guess that's as a minority country, small country at the bottom of the earth, we may be not considered in that discussion. Mm. Like, we still don't have PlayStation Now.
Well, yeah. But that's obviously Sony's looked at it and went, it's not viable now. Do you know what I mean? There's no use for it there, other than maybe one or two places, if you know what I mean. So that's
yeah, it's in like 16 countries. Apparently, it's very good in how it's working, but it's probably because the cost to have the servers more localized around the world is too high.
Mm-hmm. It's cost and effect, isn't it? It's the more money they can make. Yeah. The better it is for them, yeah.
So yeah, so I'm still not that. I don't want streaming to take over because yeah, I want to buy my console and I want to put a disc in and I want to play it and not have to worry about the internet.
Well, I don't know. My internet's fair enough, so can't complain. Could be better.
Well, we still do. We still do.
Yeah, that's the way I like. So anything else happening news-wise that's sticking to?
Well, since we last talked, I think we have a release date for Elden Ring, which is exciting, and I keep forgetting that exists. And that's a big thing for me as being a From Software fan.
The trailer looked okay. It just looked much of a muchness to me, if you know what I mean. Like, I was like, for it being hyped so hard, I was like, it's alright, I suppose. Do you know what I mean? It was without going into the minutia and stuff and all that side, I was just like, big knights, bigger baddies, same kind of thing. I was like, it's a thing, I suppose. I liked how Jeff Keighley tried to basically take total ownership of revealing it to the world. That was nice of Jeff. But other than that, it's I think Death Stranded Director's Cut get a bit more rise out of me.
Yeah, see, I'm a huge From Software fan. Like, every one of their new IPs have been, in the last 12 years, have been, you know, 11 out of 10s. bangers. And so if they can pull that lightning in a bottle off again, then it's going to be a good game. But I think managing expectations is important, because I enjoyed Dark Souls 3 well enough, but it doesn't, the longer I've been away from it, the more I'm like, eh, it's just Dark Souls 1, Demon Souls, Sekiro, Bloodborne, that's where it's at. And so if they can pull off that magic with a new IP again,
Nero like they have for the...
Who?
Nero?
Neo.
Aye, Neo.
That's not From Software, though.
I suppose.
I'm talking about just From Software games.
Fine.
Neo was very good as well. But, yeah, anyway, so I'm excited. It's just, yeah, it's kind of hard to believe that it's actually happening because it's been a while.
Oh, it was always going to happen. I think if Final Fantasy Remake showed told us anything, I think it's a case of majority of these kind of big titles will happen. And I think the hype around it was too much not to happen, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah, and Miyazaki, the type of person he is, he just puts his head down and works. And that's why I'm surprised it was announced so early.
Yeah, I don't know what the thingy Martin's input's going to be on it, but I'm interested to see that. Because it's either going to be extremely story-heavy in some respects, if you know what I mean, or he's just going to be like, he's looked at it and he's like, that's fine. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I don't know, it could be just, you're right. His name's Forefront.
But that was before, that was before the whole Game of Thrones episode scenario on it, and that was the thing. But
well, he didn't write that.
No, that's what I mean, he was like, that's when he was like a hot topic, he was like Mr., you know I mean, he was Mr. Game of Thrones, and then obviously the shit hit the fan, and you're kind of like, well, but the thing is, it's a known factor, that guy takes his time when he's writing stuff, because... Well, he doesn't need to hurry up for anybody. So, I'm really, other than his name being attached to it, I'm kind of like, how's he going to play an element in it, you know?
Yeah, I just remember talking on a podcast about how the rumour of that, and being told, nah, there's no way that's happening, that's a load of rubbish. And then, and I was like, nah, I think it could happen. And then it happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be...
It's got money.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting that it is happening, because I always like when worlds collide, and this is gaming meets author. Mm-hmm. And that's when we've seen that kind of happen before with The Witcher, like it creates a really rich, deep world, and so it potentially could help, but it also could make it convoluted and just drag the game down. So it's hard to say, because part of what From Software do well is their ambiguous storytelling. They kind of, it's almost like there are gaps in the dialogue, and as the player you get to fill those in. And I know that's what I like about that storytelling, is that you can have your own headcanon that is just as valid as the next person's. And so I don't know, if it's too filled in, it may lose some of that magic. At the same time, if it has like a deep rich lore, then that could help it too. So it's hard to say.
The other way to go is that you'll spin it and you'll do a book, standalone book, a prequel book or something to build the universe of the world. You know what I mean? So I could see that happening. He had input on the game, but realistically speaking, he was doing a side project which was linked to it. Do you know what I mean?
And maybe that's why it's taken us so long.
Well, you never know.
But, because every other game...
I think they wanted the remake of Demon's Souls to be out the way. I think it cast a shadow, if you know what I mean on it. I think Sony might have said to them, hold back until we're done and dusted here, you know what I mean?
It's not exclusive though, is it?
Demon's Souls?
I thought it's on everything.
Yeah.
No, Demon's Souls, I know, is exclusive. Yeah, I mean,
Elden Ring's on everything. Well,
yeah, exactly. So I don't know if Sony would have any sway. And I don't know how much influence From Software had over the Demon's Souls remake.
I don't think they had much for what the... I don't know, I think it was an in-house Sony job, you know, first party Sony job on it.
So. Yeah, because they held the rights to it.
Mm. But I still think as well, but it's a Japanese company making a Japanese game. Yeah, it's Namco Bandai as well is a Japanese, they're publishing Elden Ring, aren't they? So there'll be some kind of might be some kind of efficate elegance to it all, where they've went, we'll gaze a break, or maybe they've used it as a tactical position and went, look, we can just hod back a wee bit till this is out and aired, and then we can strike the new. First, the thing is, this is the art. Well, I know we've got a release date, but you know what I mean? They're never set in stone, you know. It's the
yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say just before is From Software historically, all their games have been, we hear rumors, they get announced, and they release within 6 months. So, like, this was the first time they've announced a game 2 years in advance.
Mm.
And it's the biggest gap we've had. And the last we heard from From Software, they had a whole bunch of like games that were being, there were games being remade. There were being, maybe that was Demon's Souls, actually, now I think about it. They may have been involved with the discussion of it and providing information and resources. But there were like, there was a games being remade. There were some historical franchises coming back. There were new IPs coming. We've seen Deracine, the VR one that they talked about. So there's a whole bunch of games that Miyazaki discussed that were in the works, but we've only seen Deracine, the VR game, and now Elden Ring. So maybe this big gap means that there could be a few games coming, because they've expanded the studio. So maybe maybe Bloodborne 2's around the corner, and it might not be that far off. Because that's the one thing that's impressive with FromSoft, that their turnaround on their games is really good. Like, they're not taking, because they have such a big team now, I think, that they can do it. Because, like, I was a little disparaging towards Dark Souls 2 and 3. I still really, really, really like those games. It's just compared to Dark Souls 1, they just don't have that same magic. Gameplay-wise, they're very good. But they were pretty quick turnarounds when you also mix in the fact that they had Bloodborne and Sekiro in the mix there. And yeah, you're talking six games in the last 10 years, 10, 12 years. That's 2 years apiece. That's pretty good.
Well, they're making money, I know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but also hitting out 10 out of 10 games, like games that are topping the Game of the Year edition.
Yeah.
Like Game of the Year each time they've released a game is pretty impressive for a studio that was really non-starter 12 years ago. No one really knew who they were.
I'm also surprised as well and how they've distanced himself, but that obviously Sekiro must have been a one done deal with them with Activision, because you would have thought Activision would have backed them for obviously Elden Ring. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I think Elden Ring is Namco going, hey, look, we made bank off the Dark Souls trilogy. Here's a big bag of cash. Can you do another Dark Fantasy? This is what I'm guessing.
Japanese studio, isn't it?
Yeah.
They might
I think they're always going
to
work better.
To work with their, you know, I mean, with their own country.
Yep, and there is that. And I don't know how much Activision had any influence over it.
I think they just published. And raked in money.
Well, I think what they were smart enough, because Activision have a habit of dabbling too much with the game.
They back away
and interfering with, yeah, like backseat directing. Whereas I think they were smart enough to say, "Hey, look, you guys do a good job, just go with it." So I don't know if they were there funding it or if they were just there to publish. I would like to see From Software publish their own. I don't see that. I reckon they could.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. That becomes a totally different entity, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, they were bought out by a huge company a few years ago, and there was concern then that they would lose their kind of smaller studio charm. But they haven't. They've still managed to do what they do.
Yeah. It's...
And. Yeah, I love these games. Like, as I said, I've jumped back in for comfort food. I've jumped in back in playing Sekiro, and it's just a phenomenal game. I did watch there was like a parody cartoon on YouTube that I came across, and I watched that, and it was pretty funny because like it popped up with like the tutorial prompts, like it pauses the game, it comes up and explains what's happening, and it's like, tutorial brought to you by Activision. and that, I could see that being the one big influence from Activision. It's like, hey, this needs to be explained better. We don't want it as obtuse as...
The more accessible it is on the ground floor, the more copies they'll flog to people, you know what I mean? You don't want to... For them, they don't want to back a game that they'll release that doesn't sell because it's too hard. It's too hard. But when you play it, as long as it's fair and it teaches you, then that's fair enough. Do you know what I mean? And I would argue that there's no reason why all games shouldn't do that. Do you know what I mean? There's no reason for being too obscure right off the bat. You know what I mean? It's not like you read a book and there's a price entry or a wall entry to climb over or watch a film, and you watch your first 5 minutes and you need to do a fucking quick quiz just to get through it, you know. But that's just a mind, that's a state of mind that quite a lot of people seem to have the new as well, you know what I mean? And a lot of people weren't happy with it. A lot of people weren't happy that people want games to be a bit more accessible in that respect.
I know, and I think it's fine. I think it's done in a good nature. Like, it's not too aggressive, but it helps. And I think it's like, even as going back to the game, I appreciated it because it's like, oh yeah, that's how these mechanics work. It just is a nice refresher, and it's not too egregious, because it's a prompt, it pops up and you can close it instantly. It's not like the Zelda ones where you got to listen to dialogue for like for like 30 seconds. But yeah, it's a good game. So I am excited for Elden Ring. That's the news.
Hooray.
But speaking of Activision, they're getting in some hot water.
Yeah.
The Diablo director left.
Well, yeah, they've kind of fucked up royally.
Which is sad.
There's an awful lot of unpacking to do on this topic, and I just think we could be here all night.
That's not the platform for that, I guess. Yeah, but it's just sad when people are mean to each other. Everyone should just be nice and treat everyone kindly.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, this will wage on for a long time, and I guarantee Bobby Kotick will still be the CEO of Activision.
It's just a shame that this guy has been around with them for a long time, this director, and obviously has a lot to offer, and they've lost him. So,
well, they shouldn't have did what they did. You know what I mean? But as I said when this broke, it's like everybody forgot Ubisoft were the big baddies at last year's E3 just before E3, all this kind of stuff broke about Ubisoft. And it gets swept under the carpet. It seems to be a cultural thing within video games companies. And I think it's going to take a lot more than a couple of white knights on Twitter shouting that it'll change and stuff. And I think it needs to be a grassroots thing. I've seen this week two examples of folk just going, what the fuck? So the team that made Savage Planet disbanded because of Stadia. They reformed the day, and they reformed, and they got a picture of everybody in the team, and a well-known games journalist tweeted, this is shocking how you launch a video games company for all white men. And I'm like, it's like, I was at a press event as well this week for a game that I can't even mutter the name of, and there were six devs there, and they were all white men. And somebody actually, during the press thing, asked the question, where's the diversity in your team? And I'm kind of like, but is it no mere the skill set for the role than it is for the... Like, you want the best people to have for doing the roles, and at the end of the day, if these six guys are the best guys to present, or whatever, then that's fair enough. Whereas they might have... Like, yeah. As the guy said, the guy's like, well, we've got a really strong Hispanic team. Like, our team are very heavily, like, members of our team are a lot of Hispanic people on our team. And I'm, like, going at myself, but at the end of the day, these six guys might be the six guys who have been briefed and taught and learned and done and the best guys to talk to. They may have media training. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I just think at the end of the day, in some respects, you need to take a wee step back and go, But no, do you know what I mean? You want to use the best tool for the job at the end of the day. And whether it is or it isn't, or whether it matches up what you want, it might not be great. And then you got to say to yourself, well, are you sacrificing the final product then just so you can be a bit more flavour of the month? I don't know. There's a whole world of hurt on it, you know what I mean? And I just think at the end of the day, having digs at studios because they've got, what's it like, because their team's made up of guys, because they were the guys who got the jobs for the mission, whatever the requirement was dependent upon making that for the game, do you know what I mean? That's the talent. It's talent at the end of the day. That's a dig that doesn't need to be made, is these guys are talented enough to be able to secure a job in a studio to make video games. Simple as that. Now, I don't know who went for the job with them, but the argument is, unless you're going to tear apart every team and look at every CV and every opportunity that's arised, you're never going to know if somebody's doing the dirty and picking teams that aren't right or know this or know that. Do you know what I mean? And I just think at the end of the day, there's a fine line between ethics and just to criticise people, if you know what I mean.
Well, exactly. It's I'm always under the... My way I look at things is not look for the negative, look for the positive.
Mm.
And unfortunately, yeah, sometimes that journalist who asked that question may be looking for the negative, and it's the worst case scenario in their mind, whereas we don't know the background of that studio. We don't know everything about it. So it's benefit of the doubt is what I'm getting at.
No, we said at the end of the day, it was a government body that investigated them, so it's not even like this is like ground zero. You're screwed if you're found to be guilty material, you know what I mean? I at the end of the day, it is what it is. But as I said as well, I think every Activision studio is working Call of Duty. Have you actually been in a Call of Duty lobby? Do you know what I mean? It's like venom begets venom, and it's like you can sit on top of a mountain and scream all night and day long about it being bad and unfair and unjust and everything. But when you see the end product of what's consuming the product, you kind of realise... Do you know what I mean? It's like you're fighting the wrong war here. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. There's other problems out there.
Aye. It's a venom that runs through that side of the industry. Aye. The people in the lobbies are poisonous. Aye, the developers poisonous. Like, end of the day, somebody had a swing as well. Dr. Disrespect, like him or not like him, right? He's going to make a game studio, and he's looking for a studio head and stuff, right? And everybody, I've seen a load of folks swinging the axe, like, oh great, the guy who filmed people in the toilets making a game studio, is that going to help the situation? And I'm going to myself, that was like a total like PR stunt. And out with that, the guys get history working on, I hate to say it, Call of Duty. And also, I'm sure he worked on Titanfall. Do you know what I mean? So he is a video games developer himself. Alter Ego, which, let's be frank as well, is making hand over fist money, even though he found people in the... Do you know what I mean? If these elements are so villainous, why the fuck are they worth a fortune? Do you know what I mean? Like, if... It's like... KSI... I personally hate KSI with a passion, right? And there's a video that he... At an event I was at once, and he's going around and being a right horrible person to a lot of young lassies, right? And I mean, like, horrible, vile person. And...
Yep.
He's selling hundreds of millions of copies of records, and he's on the and I'm going, all you need to do is go on YouTube and the video's there. Watch the video. See how he speaks to them. See how he treats them at this show. To the point, the show found out and they banned him for every show they'll ever have, he's been banned for. To the point, the following year, he wasn't allowed in, so he turned up and stood outside the venue, and I went on Twitter and I said, oh, look, there's that sad sack. He ended up following me on Twitter that day. I still have the email telling me he's following me. And I waited for him to come and have a say to me, because I would have cut him down to size like a weed. Because he thinks he's all urban and straight. It's like Logan Paul. These people are venom. These people are horrible creatures. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And we give them attention.
Yeah. Yeah. They're worth millions. They're getting screen time on TV. You're buying games. You're buying Fortnite skins of them. You're buying whatever. And it's kind of like, somewhere we need to step back, people, and go, if we really are going to change, we need to do it at the base level. Stop idolising fools who empower this vision to make kids think it's okay, which then means when companies like Activision behave the way they have, it's just like, oh, that's what it is, oh, that's fine. Do you know what I mean? And
yeah.
I'm back to my original statement where I'm kind of like, right, I kind of follow a certain crowd on Twitter, as we all do, and the thing is, you build yourself into an ecosphere, and all your people sit and shout and scream and shout and scream. But what you don't realise is you're just bouncing off your sphere into the back of the sphere, to the front of the sphere. It never breaks out the bubble.
Yeah, echo chamber.
You're preaching to the choir, period. And I think that's got a lot to do with it as well. Like, it's never going to change, because you can ride your white knight all night long and say, oh, I'm no reviewing Activision games and I'm no covering Activision games. Oh, yeah, any secret? There could never be, there literally from this day forth, there could be no stories of COD, no coverage of COD, and nothing to do with COD in any outlet, video games related, right? COD will still sell millions.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean?
Because the people who play it aren't interested in the media, games media.
No, they don't give a monkeys. All they care about is getting in there and shooting folk. And that's the short of it. And I think at the end of the day, like I said, this is a bigger topic than what you and me can put right in the world now. And I think it's just a case of, there's a whole, like, folk need to step back and see the bigger picture. And it goes beyond just the studio and their ethos. It goes to the players, to the fact that people idolise, the streaming culture. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's just a crooked world, you know what I mean? And I think at the end of the day, a lot of that's been lost, because they're mining, like, same way kids will play Minecraft to mine for fucking resources, streamers mine their audience. You're basically just a retention tool to these people, do you know what I mean? Whether it's on YouTube for subs or whatever, you are nothing more than a number on a spreadsheet. What's the numbers? All right, how much of them are attending, are being retained and stuff? You know what I mean? It's a horrible way to think it. But you're basically monetizing the youth into basically being, like, there's a bit in Matrix in it where they're like, oh, basically they've took a human body and turned them into a battery. Well, they've took a fucking human and they've turned them into basically a cash machine. Do you know what I mean? It's the same shit. And it's just,
that's a good point. Yeah. Well, I go back to what I said earlier. Everyone just needs to be kind to each other. If everyone did that, then the world would be a better place.
Yeah, it's
no one's perfect.
Yeah, and like, it's the old scenario as well. Is if this went on for so long, why did it, like you know what I mean? I know there's a whole subculture there as well, and it's the whole, I know, I mean, you could dig a hole for yourself and stuff and the whole argument, and at the end of the day, there needs to be infrastructure and all of that stuff, and, like, I don't know, unionise it, but it's the same thing, kind of thing. There seems to be nowhere for these people to turn to when shit hits the fan, plus there seems to be no chain of command that when shit hits the fan, the person who does it fears their position, do you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Because it came out ages ago that apparently this Activision lawsuit was known. So a couple of months ago, there was like a lot of people left Activision. Like the lead creator on Overwatch left before Overwatch 2 was even, you know what I mean? And people were kind of saying, well, the smoke signals came early, so they all jumped ship and ran away super fast. The people who were maybe caught up in this situation as well, and the allegations, and I think that's, well, I've heard people saying as well, that's maybe why this guy jumped ship, is because he's a wrongin as well, and it's just like, fuck me. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You see the fucking state of this guy, one left hook and he's on the deck greeting like a wee lassie, come on. Do you know what I mean? What, well, these fools fucking overpower you? Fucking, if he's your gaffer, he's your gaffer, but you can still be a dickhead, you know what I mean? I just don't get the logistics behind it. You know, I mean, I know it's probably a culture of fear he's they've fostered and created within these places, but it's just a weird, just, oh, it's bizarre. But aye, it's just, oh, no, make any difference. Bobby Kotick's still going to be where he is, and that'll be the end of it. And still make Call of Duty. They can make Call of Duty till the coups come home, and they'll forget. Just make COD, and they'd make a fortune. You know what I mean?
Right, and Diablo 4 will still sell well.
Look, they sacked, what was it, 400, 500 folk, and then they announced the biggest profits of the year ever because of fucking Warzone. Do you know what I mean? Like, come on.
Crazy.
You can't be making coin hand over fist and then sacking your employees. Do you know what I mean? It's just bad chat.
Yeah, it is.
Anyway,
well, that was a bit more negative. Just a bit. Maybe she could look more positive.
Yeah, just a bit. So what have you been playing?
Yeah, so it's been a while since we've actually chatted, so I actually can't remember what I've played that we haven't talked about. I think the first would be the big one, because we didn't get around to talking about when it came out, was the Final Fantasy expansion.
Intermission. Integration's the upgraded version, isn't it?
Yeah. Which is a little complicated working out how to get that and how it worked. I end up having to download the game, I think, three times within a day. So it's like 300 gigs in a day. Because I had the PS4 version downloaded in advance, ready for it. Then that came out and I couldn't buy the upgrade. Yeah, because it wouldn't let me buy the upgrade. Or download the upgrade. And then it did. So I deleted it, downloaded the PS5 version when that came out. Because I thought it would just be an upgrade, but no, it's a whole different version. You've got to actually download a whole different version. So then I downloaded the PlayStation 5 version, which allowed me to buy the expansion. But I couldn't buy the expansion until I had the PS5 version downloaded. So then I bought the expansion, went into the game, and my save wasn't there. And then I noticed in the menu that there's a option to upload your PS4 save and then download onto PS5. So then I had to download the PS4 version again, load that up, upload my save, delete that, and then download the save on my
Sounds
PS5 version.
Super easy. super easy to do.
So I deleted and downloaded the game like three, maybe even four times within a week, and three of those were in within one day. And funny enough, the PS5 version is smaller, and I think it's because of the solid-state hard drive. They don't have to repeat assets as much.
Mm.
And so it ends up being a bit smaller. But the expansion is really good. I thought it was fun. It was fun playing as Yuffie. The combat didn't have as much depth, I didn't feel, as the main game, because it was just a simpler. The hard mode final boss I haven't done, because it's just ridiculously hard, like he just one shots you. So yeah, I have to level up some more materia and get some higher HP, I guess. But other than that, it was really good. Like it was interesting. A little shorter than I thought it would be. It was a little disappointing how short it was when they had the chapters, and it's like chapter 2, and then you're like, oh, okay, it's going to go into chapter 3, 4 maybe, and then it ends. Like, it's just the two chapters. Is it two or three?
Two, I think.
I think it's just two. So it was a little abrupt how it ended, but I did, I did enjoy it. Did you enjoy it?
It was good. It was pretty decent. I liked how it weaves its way into the main story. Like, there's the bits where you see Cloud and stuff.
Mm, yeah, no, I thought that was cool.
It's kind of like, it's that whole kind of, oh yeah, I remember being there, and then you're like, oh, that's cool. And it's like, oh, they were there. It's a kind of simultaneous, it's cool how they took that kind of steer with it. How they could have had it so that you would never have seen them, but it's the fact that you actually see them doing their thing while you're doing your thing, and obviously you've already done the thing. It's Cloud that's kind of cool. It's like, oh yeah, that's pretty, but never the twain will meet.
yeah I would have liked the Shinra building stuff to maybe intertwine, like, while I thought that's what was going to be happening.
Mm.
You know, like a Resident Evil 2 and 3 kind of situation where...
Yeah, you blow a door, a hole in the wall, yeah. And the hole in the wall is there for the other ones when you get there, sort of thing.
Well, yeah, and they're over the same time period, and so the same explosion that it blows up the city is the same explosion for both games.
Mm.
Like, you're both escaping at the same time, just in different parts of the... You're in different parts of the city. But the timeline's the same. I thought they were going to be leading into that, and I thought it kind of ended a little abruptly, which was a little bit disappointing. And they introduced characters. I had to think, who are these guys? And then I had to go back into my archives of my brain and then do some research, because it's been a long time since I played Crisis Core.
Mm.
But I thought that was interesting.
I'm still surprised that the core game hasn't been ported to the Xbox yet, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Because the exclusivity deal ended about 6 months ago. And I had
true.
Money on it appearing on Games Pass day one at E3, maybe even the night at E3, them announcing it. But Gamescom's coming, still time. I definitely think we'll see it before the end of the year.
Potentially. I did like, I don't know, I guess it's a little bit spoilers. I liked that they added to the ending of the original remake.
Yeah.
Which ties into the original game a little bit more. I just thought that was a nice touch, like that it gave that kind of Easter egg ending. I thought that was really cool.
I'm assuming that's it for DLC, but for the remake. I don't know if they'll dare anything else for it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, they could, because there was also... Are we worried about spoilers? I don't know.
We'll dance around them just for sake of...
Yeah. Well, because there was the other... At the end of the remake, there was kind of like a... is this person here or is he not?
Yeah.
And then they showed more of him. And so we discussed this with the original remake, Brian and I, on this podcast last year. Is there going to be multiple timelines? Have they changed the fates and the timelines from the Crisis Core ending?
Mm.
Which is, we can spoil that. Crisis Core, Zack, everyone knows Zack, dies. Whereas they allude to this, we see the same cutscene at the end of Final Fantasy VII Remake, but instead of him being battle damaged and dying, he's fit and healthy.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting one. Like, I don't know what they're doing.
Well, they've not announced anything. That's the thing. The second chapter part hasn't been announced.
Well, exactly. We don't know when that's coming. I'm kind of hoping they do a shadow, pretty like a it's here kind of thing, and it's out in 3 months. I hope it's not far away.
Oof, I don't know.
I know, but you can throw me a bone here. I can hope.
The world almost ended as well, so I don't... Well, see, you say that, but obviously the engine's there, the assets are there, do you know what I mean? It's an easier thing, I'm assuming, to rig up that second one.
Well, yeah, that's what I would think. Because unless they're changing gameplay drastically, whereas I want them to keep the same, like I want...
I imagine it'll keep the same, the whole game will run on the same engine right to the end. As in, the core idea of combat and stuff will stay the same, they'll just add in new characters where enough and locations.
I really hope so. And the combat system worked for a very different combat style with Yuffie and I can't remember his name. Dude.
Oh.
Like how it...
I don't know his name.
I can't remember it. But yeah, like I really liked that tag team system it had.
Yeah.
So like they can evolve it, I guess, and add other styles, which is kind of cool. Yeah, so it's got legs to grow. I don't want them to change it too much. I just don't know what they're going to do. Are they going to do other sequel games where you start back at level 1 and have to get all your stuff again? Or is the save going to bring across your gear? And are you going to be leveling up to a level 150 by the end of is the next game only going to let you get to level 75? I don't know. Like, I've already maxed out a bunch of materia, so what do they do? Like, I'm curious.
Sonnen. That's the guy's name.
Huh?
Sonnen.
What's his name?
Sonnen.
Ah, I knew it was something with an S. I was going to say Shannon, but I knew it wasn't Shannon because it's Sonnen. That's right. What else have I been playing? I kind of was been waiting for stuff, so I had Immortals Fenyx Rising for a long time now, but never touched it. The PS5 version.
Right.
So I picked that up.
Pleasant enough. Pleasant enough video game.
Yeah, it was like Breath of the Wild, but meets Greek mythology.
Well, a bit of Assassin's Creed in there as well, for good measure. Some core ideas for Assassin's Creed.
Dearly.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's any open world. But even Breath of the Wild had that stuff. You climb towers to open up map. This had same thing.
Yeah, but that's Ubisoft. So give them their due with their own thing.
Yeah, but Breath of the Wild did that. Yeah, I guess. Breath of the Wild took that from them, I guess.
I would imagine Breath of the Wild took it for them because Ubi went through a stage in their life where it was the mandate, wasn't it? Every Ubisoft game must have these five criteria. So that's why every Ubisoft had those five criteria. So,
like, it's a really pretty game. Like, it looks really good.
Yeah.
The movement was a little janky at first, but you kind of get used to it. Combat was
funny.
Fine.
It's well written, I thought.
Yeah, it got a little annoying at times, but yes, it was. It had like this kind of funny satire kind of humour, dry humour.
Yeah, I knew what it was doing.
Yeah. And there was some good twists at the end. They kind of spiced things up a little bit. It was fun. I think what it does, like, it has a mechanic where you can go into first-person mode and kind of spot items around the world, which is something that's not in Breath of the Wild, and I think in some ways that ruins the gameplay.
Mm.
Not ruins, that's probably a bit harsh. Whereas Breath of the Wild, what a part of its charm was, that hill looks interesting, I'm going to go look at that hill. And so you'd climb that hill and you would find something interesting.
You find nothing.
And
there.
This...
Nothing.
Well, or, yeah, well,
no,
nothing.
No, tell
but it usually you was.
You climb the hill and you'd find
a
fucking senator fucking monster guy.
Yeah.
Fucking beat you down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We've all been there.
But the exploring of the world was interesting, I found, with Breath of the Wild. Whereas this looks just as good, like, in its own way, its own art style, this looks very good. But I didn't find... You could glide. It's the same as Breath of the Wild. Just glide. It's gliding, not filing. You're falling with style. You're doing Buzz Lightyear.
I was going to say, okay, Buzz Lightyear, but okay.
But I found that I wasn't paying attention to my surroundings the same way I would with Breath of the Wild, because I could just look in and then mark them, and I just was chasing what was on the compass, and I was just following the marker. And it took away from the kind of the awe or the prettiness of the environment. But it was a fun game. I got through it. I kind of was keen to try there's like the Asian Gods DLC.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was like, I don't know. I kind of had enough of the game now. I don't know if I can be bothered.
Yeah, it's a bit... It's one of the it's a game you play for playing's sake, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing. I'm done.
Yeah, Disney egg you on. It's not like, I need to, it's not like a game I'm going to talk about, actually. Where I was really interested to go back to the story in it, I was just like, with that, I was like, it's kind of fuzzing that Assassin's Creed thing where kind of did it all before and I'm doing it all again, just with different ideas and stuff, you know? So,
I did like some of the world puzzles and the physics puzzles. They are fun, and it's very Breath of the Wild as well. And in some places, I think they did it better, and others they did it a lot worse. It was like, they did well in a lot of spots. But I like some of the side things to get the coins to upgrade your abilities. The reward for those just wasn't enough. Like, you're spending 10, 20 minutes on some of them, and you're getting 4 coins, and most things you need 8 to 10 coins to upgrade. I just stopped doing them because they just became too painful because the reward wasn't there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I thought that was a bit of a shame. It was just too egregious the time it expect you to do some of the world exploring, and so I just started just skipping them. But other than that, it was a fun game. I enjoyed it. I'm ready to trade it in now. I don't need to play it anymore. Again, I mentioned earlier that I've gone back to Sekiro as some comfort food, and boy, do I like that game. It is so good to get back into it, and I'm still dying, but I'm happy that my muscle memory is coming back, and I've beaten a lot of the hard bosses on my first go, if not second. I really haven't struggled too much. And I'm ready to do I never got around to doing the other endings in my other playthroughs, so I'm looking forward to trying out and doing some of the other playthroughs, which is exciting.
Cool.
Not playthroughs, other endings. And I'm up to the point where I can do the first ending. So I don't know if you know, there's an ending, not halfway, maybe two thirds of the way through the game. There's a way to get an ending like early, and I'm up to that point.
Oh wow!
Did you ever play Sekiro?
Yes.
Did you like it?
Yes. I'm trying to remember it. I just remember falling off roofs a lot. It was my downfall in Sekiro was falling off roofs.
Death.
Sekiro and thingy. What do you call it? Ghost of Kojima.
Tsushima.
They share the same kind of space in my head when I think back visually. There's a bit of overlap there because I'm going, what is that? Sekiro, you had the Captain America style shield, didn't you? Or your arm.
you had the prosthetic and you had the, yeah.
Yeah, and you could put a flamethrower on it, couldn't you?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. I just remember falling off roofs in that.
I'm finding I'm not...
The crow guys.
Yeah, the crow guys. The guys up on the kites are my favourite.
Yeah! Well, speaking of that, are you going to double dip on Ghost when it gave me the Director's Super Dancing Special Edition releases?
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, yeah. Because you mentioned that, I'm like, yeah, that's some big news. That's next. That's coming. That's a week away.
Yeah, it's not far away.
I'm getting that DLC for sure. I love that game.
Well, it's no DLC. It's a new game. That's the problem.
What do you mean, a new game?
You can't. I don't think you can get it. You can't. You can buy it as DLC.
Yeah, you can.
Can you? Because I thought the whole point was it was them forcing people to buy it on the PS5 because it's.
You can play the disc.
The new island.
No, I'm pretty sure. Because
there's no an upgrade. There's no upgrade for it for free. That's the annoying thing. Well, there's been an upgrade in brackets, really big brackets, but this is like the full Buna upgrade. You know what I mean?
I'm pretty sure that if you have the disc, you can buy the upgrade and the expansion. As like a bundle for like $30 or something.
It's still not cheap. £30 for how big's the island? You know what I mean?
Oh no, it won't be £30. It'll be like £20.
But still,
yeah. But at the same time, the original game was fantastic. There was lots of content.
DLC was free, wasn't it? The DLC.
Exactly.
Multiplayer was free. I just think it's
It was phenomenal.
I think it's cheekier Sony, and I think it's Sony trying to make money back. The only way Sony knows how is by releasing an HD upgrade, but instead of just like on the Xbox, that would be free, the upgrade, and then the DLC would be charged for, and they'd do a bundle edition, right? I just think it's a bit cheeky that they're not doing the free upgrade, and they're basically forcing you, if you want the PS5 version, to buy the game again. Do you know what I mean?
I'm pretty sure that having the disc, you can get access to the PS5 version.
Because I think it's the same model Death Stranding's got as well for the director's cut. so you're not getting upgrades. The upgrade for free. You're having to buy the special edition version of it to get, you know.
Because
the director's cut of fucking Death Stranded just looks like they looked at it and they went, yeah, you know what is shit about this game? Having to walk everywhere. Like, let's just put in loads of stuff to get you across the map as fast as possible, you know what I mean? It's that kind of... it's kind of minor it's minor changes they're making to these games, but they are better quality of life changes, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, they looked funny. Like that PlayStation 5 version trailer was really funny. Like seeing some of the things they're adding, but it's no interest in buying it again or playing it again. Like that game's a one and done for me. I've got no interest in playing this
game. Apparently, kind of wants to go back just to see what the road looks like now, because apparently the road's almost like it's totally built. Because I was there when the road was nothing. It was like a tiny bit of tarmac, but apparently it's like a massive road now across the map. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, because it's a shared world, isn't it? Like, there's like a weird shared.
You put your resources into the, you could build stuff like outposts and power boxes, or you could put your resources into the road. And obviously, it's a united effort to build the road across the map to make life a bit easier. So, but then it turns out.
It's not fully shared. It was a weird system. It wasn't fully shared because I built a lot of roads, but then I never really got any new roads added from the online system. Mm. It was a bit weird.
I would find random.
I never really understood how it was shared.
Bits and bobs. Fully. But the whole thing about the bikes, like you dump a bike and somebody else could pick the bike up, it never really worked. I never ever found any bikes other than my bike, if you know what I mean. I was like, huh.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
yeah. It might be better now, the connected.
Part of me still, like, I kind of want to just. I don't know. There's something about that game, I'm still kind of like, unfinished business, but I'm like. I just kind of be fucked with the delivery stuff in it.
Did you finish it?
I don't think so. I think I got like 3/4 of the way through it and just went, I'm done.
I go to there's a few stagnation desert spots.
Deserts where I go to. Because I did the mountains. And the mountains took it out of me. Because I hated the mountains.
Yeah, that area there, it kind of stagnates a little bit, and then
it's because it's a lot of climbing back and forth, and there's nothing there, and you're out in the cold, and
it locks you in. You have to do a whole lot of side missions to unlock the next main mission, and it gets a little bit egregious. Like you just can't power through, but then after that point, it kind of just speeds up, and you kind of just shoot through the end, the 6-hour ending. but the last game I actually want to talk about in more depth is Green Hell. I really don't like survival games generally. I find them too repetitive and grindy. It came out in June. Oh, really?
Yeah, Green Hell 2.
Yeah, that's pretty quick. It's not a full price game. It was only $40 in New Zealand, so it'd probably be £20 at most for you. Mm-hmm. It's again, I don't like survival games like Ark and stuff like that. I just find them painful. It's just they're too hard to get going and lots of grinding with no progression. And I hate playing games where you play for 2 hours and you're like, oh, I just died and I've lost everything. And it's just, I don't like that. Whereas my son loves that kind of stuff. He loves crafting and he loves survival games. This one, its unique thing is that you can co-op the story, and it actually is very clear that it has a story. A lot of these survival games don't have stories, and I like a good story. And so I thought I'd give it a go because it has the co-op story, and it does, and it works. At first, it took us a long while. We reset because we kind of had a couple of bad deaths, and so I just reset the world and start again. Now we know a new few things. So at first I was getting a little bit frustrated with the whole survival situation. But once we learnt how the game works and how we need to survive, I've really got into it. And we managed to trigger a few story events by exploring out. And it's been really fun being able to like kind of team up together and work together to make like achieve goals. And like I think solo would be a lot harder. But... I guess there'd be more food because you're not sharing food, so it might not be harder. I don't know. Maybe. But it's been really fun. Like, you're lost in the Amazon, the Brazilian Amazon, and you're trying to find your wife, partner. No, this one is you are a what's the word, like people who studies like the history of humans, like anthropologist or something.
Yeah,
is that the word?
I think so.
So I think that's your main character is that. So you and but not that that matters, but they just mention it. So the tutorial is showing you the mechanics in a safe environment because you both get there, you and the wife. But strange enough, you never really interact. She's always at a distance or like in her tent, and you can't get into her. So you never actually see her up close. So I think there might be something weird going on. So then you've got all this fancy gear, but it teaches you how to pick up things and like split wood and things like that, and use a weapon or an axe. And then a couple of days go by, and the idea is that she's off to go meet with one of these tribes that live in the jungle, like, you know, that are detached from modern society. And the idea is that she's going to go in, and she's met with them before and they know her, and she's going to become a part of the tribe, and then when they're happy, she's going to introduce you to them so you can learn more about them. And so she goes off, and you're communicating over radio, and time passes, and then she calls in the middle of the night saying she needs help, things have gone bad. And so you start in the middle of the night going after her, and then it's just a cutscene of you falling and crazy things happening, and then you wake up lost in the jungle with nothing except your radio. And yes, then you're just trying to find her. And so yeah, I can say it's like your normal survival game. There is just a survival mode, which I'm not interested in. But the mystery that's presented along with the survival is I find very enthralling and is pulling me through. And even the crafting is simple enough, but complicated enough to be enjoyable to try, and you feel satisfaction when you unlock and work out how to do something. There's a journal system, so like if you sit in, like you can learn how to make structures by seeing them. Like, so we've come across an abandoned tribal village, and they had like a drying rack, and so like, oh, now we know how to make a drying rack. Things like that. So you learn from exploring as well, which is kind of cool. Yeah, it's a good game. I'm pretty impressed with it.
It reminds me of Stranded Deep, which is you get stranded, you're in a plane crash and you end up on a desert island, and you need to sit, kind of survive on the island, but then you need to make a raft to sail to other islands, if you know what I mean. Sounds a kind of...
Yeah. Odin's been playing that because that was free on PlayStation Plus last month, actually. And he said that's really hard and he keeps getting eaten by sharks.
Top tip, stay out of the water. But
but it's the thing, as you say, you have to actually go between islands, and so it actually forces you to leave the island pretty quickly. And he's like, I left the first island. Thank you.
Once you use all the resources on the island, you need to kind of... It's not like one of these ones where you can... it's like stuff will regrow quick. I think trees grow in real time or something, I was told.
So. Yeah, so this is pretty generous. We've had some... As I said, this is a smaller studio. It's not like a big fancy title, so it's not perfect. Like, one of the things we've noticed is like rocks keep spawning. And like in a spot down by the river where you start, like we came in one... We loaded up the game once and it was just like... Maybe like 100 like big rocks. It was like 4 when you first start, and so I don't know why there's so many rocks, and they keep moving at nighttime. The rocks, like, they get up and walk. It's kind of funny. But the graphics aren't terrible. Like, they're pretty good in general. The jungle looks nice. The animations are a little janky of the animals at times. But yeah, it works. There's this mechanic where you can look at your body, and it's kind of like you get leeches and you can actually look at your limbs and then pull them off. But the cool thing is you can help your buddies, and you're playing co-op, you can pull off their leeches as well. So they don't have to go. Yeah. It's good. There's you've got your health meters, and so you've got a smartwatch that tracks your proteins, your good fats, and your carbs, and your water. And so you just got to make sure you're staying. So there's a lot of trial and error finding out how things will affect things. Like, well, yeah, some things have fat, some things have carbs, some things have protein, some things have a mix.
Well, what you've got, there you go, the Green Hell Spirit of the Amazon Part 2 is available. Oh, it was available on June the 22nd, so it's out there now.
Oh, really?
Yes, on PC. So.
Okay, so it's not on console yet then, I guess. No. I wonder if... yeah, interesting.
I get pinged that news dropped about 3 days after I got told, after the first one came to PC, Xbox, or came to consoles.
Yeah, so. See, I wonder if it is a slightly older game on PC. I don't know when it came out on PC.
You're probably talking about a year. It had been out on PC.
Yeah, probably.
Although, it definitely means the kind of game that's went through early access, you know what I mean? So.
Yeah, again, it's not a perfect game, and it's clearly probably suited for mouse, the way the backpack works and whatnot. It's a little slow with the analog stick dragging across and clicking and moving things. Like, it would be a lot easier with a mouse and keyboard. But it does work. It takes a minute to get used to it, but it's not terrible.
Cool.
And yeah, I'm actually really enjoying it. For something different, as I say, I really dislike survival games. I've just got no interest in them. I tried Ark, and I hated it. I just hated it. Whereas this isn't as egregious as that in its crafting and grind. It's a little bit more generous. It feels like there is a challenge, but then once you get past that challenge, it's like genuine, like you can make progress.
Cool, cool.
Yeah. What have you been playing?
Make it short and sweet. Played The Ascent. It's pretty good. Diablo in a cyberpunk universe. It's not as long as what you'd hope it would be, but it is quite interesting, the story and the idea behind it. The world and stuff's beautiful. It's really nicely layered and stuff. It's kind of... There's a real Judge Dredd vibe to the world. Combat's good. It's on Games Pass. It's good. If you're looking for a, you can play it in free player co-op, which is good. It's not bad. The other thing I played, which was in key with you talking about Ubisoft, was I played Bloodlines, which was the DLC for Watch Dogs Legions, What they've done is, where a lot of people didn't like Legions because there wasn't a main character, because it was pick your own character for the crowd kind of thing, they've actually brought back Aiden Pierce and Wrench for Watch Dogs 1 and 2, which is really, really interesting. I enjoyed it, but I didn't overly enjoy it because it felt like it was like a final swan song for Aiden. And that was a bit of a kind of gut punch, because I quite like Aiden Pierce, I know it's shocking, but it felt more like Aiden was kind of riding off into the sunset in it. It was great to play as him again, and it was great because he brought his own tools and stuff to the ring, so Wrench can do real cool things hacking, so whenever he shoots his gun, the bullets magically hack things and stuff. It's really bizarre, whereas Aiden's got like a... You can do like a supercharged shot when he reloads, active reload basically, and that was really fun, and it was different playing with two named characters rather than just playing as generic bin man who's become a hero.
Generic.
But I don't know, it's like I kind of wanted more for it in a kind of way, if you know what I mean. End of the story is good, and it kind of sets up, doesn't really set up things, it kind of sets up the idea that Wrench, they could do a Watch Dogs with Wrench if they wanted in the future, or Aiden's still there, but at the same time I think it's kind of Aiden's final swan song in the Watch Dog universe, if you know what I mean. There's a lot of metaphorical and physical putting Sleeping Dogs to rest in it, but the only other thing I didn't like about that was because I'd played Legions to death, I knew the locations inside and out. And because this takes part within the City of London, there's no new areas or no new buildings on that, so I knew it all off by heart, and it was just a bit disappointing, if you know what I mean. But again, 8 hours, it's a fun wee romp. Staying with the old school 4-player good time co-op shenanigans, I played Dark Alliance, which is a Dungeons and Dragons game, and it tries to be good, but it's just jank. That's the word. Just jank.
It's got, I forgot that's gone. The game that I played.
It's got stuff going for it, but it can't stick the landing. And I don't know why. Connection issues aside, it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
If it wants to play, it's fine. But see, sometimes we've had 3 players fall out a match at the last minute, and angry voices were heard.
But even the difficulty settings seem off. Like, you play it,
yeah,
you know, you can choose the difficulty.
Yeah, it like goes from walk in the park to you're never surviving this ever in a million years.
We were doing, Odin and I, we were probably, I was like 1800 power, and Odin was like 1700, and we were doing 1500 difficulty, and we just being one-shotted by everything.
Yeah, like, we
it was just ridiculous.
What you would call hard, and the damage we dealt to enemies, they dealt exactly the same back at us, and that was just no. And there's just an array of issues with it, whether it would be clipping on the environment, enemies spawning but just standing there. I've had that a good few times. You just run up to them and you welly them, and they're just standing there like, this is nice.
And the rubber banding of enemies is all over the show.
yeah. Some enemies you can hit with an axe and you'll damage them instantaneously. Other enemies, it's like you're there for a week. I don't understand that. It's okay. I don't know. I play it to be social. That's my argument. What else have I played? One More Simulator. It's enough said about that. Played Splitgate, free to play game that is apparently the greatest shooter ever on the world right now. It's like Halo meets Portal. I stopped playing it because I can't. It's a 4-man team and they don't have enough server space. So right now there's quite lengthy waits to get into the game through the servers. Plus, it needs tweaked, so I've kind of come off that, but the first 2-3 nights at launching, it was quite quiet, and I did enjoy what I played, but we'll see what happens when it's patched and stuff. There's also talk of Epic buying the studio that made it, so that would be quite interesting. The only other thing I've really played that is worth note that I can actually talk about is Bloodroots, which is a Hotline Miami style Viking up, where you play as a Viking guy, woodsman, that's been left for dead, and you're basically killing everybody to get back up to who it was that killed you or set you up. So you're after this gang, and you can pick up random weapons when you're playing. So like, you can pick up everything from ladders to swords to axes to stuff like fence posts and carrots and stuff, and it plays by the one hit rule, where if you get hit you die stuff. So it's very much a puzzler in a way, and it's a really nice wee palette cleanser after you've played something big. You put that on, levels are short, sharp and to the point, and I really enjoyed it. It's on Games Pass again. I've not heard anybody talking about it. The visuals, it's quite Samurai Jackian visual style, which again appeals to me. It's got quite a funny sense of humour when you're telling the stories, because when you kill the gang leaders, they come back to you as ghosts and talk to you at night before you go to bed. And it's quite an interesting wee game. But yeah, other than that, there's been a fair bit else. Played Flight Sim. Really fun taking off, really fun landing, bit in the middle, it's boring as fuck. That's pretty much it. You know what I mean? It's also, there's zero fighter planes, there's no war aircraft in it. So you can buy like Spitfires for it and fighter jets, but they're like £20-25 each a plane. Yeah, that's not happening. So but that's not to take it away, it is an amazingly stunning video game, and just the ability to go to the globe and zoom in where you are in the world and see like the nearest airfield to you and fly for that, it's just an amazing feeling when you're flying and you're using real time weather dynamics. So like it feeds the data off some weather site, so if it's raining outside your window, it's raining in the game and stuff. There's so much tech in that game, it's unholy. It's just a pity that it's a bit unexciting, because there's no much to do in the sky or dodge in the sky. It's not like there's trees and stuff, so you're just kind of flying about. But again, it's on Games Pass, it's worth a download. Well, it's 90 gig, but it's worth a download and a play if you're looking for something to play. So.
Just because that game's taking a lot from the servers, aren't they? You're not holding all the assets on your console.
It's
server.
It's a broadband killer. Apparently, if you don't get infinite broadband, maybe don't play it. But you can switch. See, it's funny because you can switch all that off, and it's horrible looking video game. Then it's horrible. It loses all the live data which it uses to render the world and stuff. So it's just like,
yeah,
it's. Again, it's worth a look. It's worth a look. You either know if you like it or you don't like it. And odds are you'll not like it, but it's worth it for the novelty, I would say. So, other than that, that's me until the next time, when I will hopefully be able to speak about some other video games.
Embargoes.
Yes, free embargoes, counting free. So,
that's exciting.
I think that's us, unless you've got.
Well, and yeah. Other. Well, I'm just excited for Ghost of Tsushima and Kena.
Well, no doubt we'll talk about that next week, next time then, I assume.
Yeah, because Kena comes out next week
we'll
too.
Hopefully we'll get next show be post Gamescom, and we can chat about Gamescom.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Some big announcements, hopefully.
Yeah, big games, big announcements, big show, end of the month, I'm up for that. Maybe Brian will come back for the dead. Maybe we will find out.
We'll see.
Do you want to do domestics?
If you want to follow us, you can follow us at Gamers Guide Pod. Is that it?
Sounds good to me. If it's not, come back next month and find out the right one.
Yeah, exactly. You can find me at VaderVanOden.com. It's got links to all my socials there. And you, what about you, Stuart? I don't know. How do we do this?
You can find me at Furious Online, tweeting on Twitter and everywhere else. There's a web address. If you want to ask us, nobody's ever sent in mail when we say it, so I'm assuming nobody cares. I don't know if we check it. Who knows? But other than that, I guess there's only one thing left to say.
Don't forget your gamepad.
Don't buy Activision games.
Done.
We'll catch you next time, guys.
Bye.
Catchies.